You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
This is The Brian Callen Show, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be at Wise Guys in Utah. That's right, the November 29th and 30th. And we have Tony Blauer on the show, and it's funny because I've been watching you on CrossFit. I watch your videos, and I think that I was very interested in your new you invented a tactical system called Spear, which is using someone's natural instincts in some ways to even cower as self-defense.
Yeah,
talk in the mic, please, Tony. Thank
okay.
you. Oh, I'm a comic. It's natural. You're a self-defense
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, but why is my mic in the shape of like some phallic device?
That's because that's how we roll here. We're sitting on the same couch together, by the way. This is very romantic. The only thing missing is shorts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I like your tantric bracelet, by the way.
Someone told me it looked like anal beads.
That's exactly what it looks like.
It's around my wrist, so it's for fisting.
Good man.
Did I just say that on the air?
You did, and that's all right. This is supposed to be a classy podcast. We're already off to a great start.
Excellent. We should get to know each other and see what happens.
Exactly.
So you
invented this thing. How did you come across? How did you come up? I mean, I hate when people say, "How did you come up with that idea?" But obviously, you probably thought to yourself. I mean, when you see real fights, people panic.
Sure.
And you sink to the level of your training.
Yep.
And so you wanted
to even sometimes I could tell you this, if it's a true ambush, so we define an ambush as a stimulus that gets introduced too quickly. Hmm. One of the classic examples I give is Frank Shamrock at the peak of his career when Kevin Jackson came across and did the first Superman punch before St. Pierre became known as the guy doing the Superman punch. You know, here's an Olympic wrestler comes flying across the ring, throws this right hand. Frank Shamrock does a complete startle flinch, and his cross-extensor reflex pushes away danger. That punch careens off his arms, and he falls into, you know, a classic clinch that gets rolled into a 24, 26-second armbar finish.
Right.
So we always say spear is a bridge to your next move, meaning your reactive brain will bypass your cognitive brain in a time of stress. And so what Frank, being an amazing athlete, you know, I knew him at the time, and I knew him, but he never trained with me. That's the neat thing about this. This is a genetic wiring. It's hardwired into every one of us. Understanding how it works, when it works, why it works, and how it's there to enhance your safety and your survivability just supercharges you. God forbid you're in a holy shit moment. And that was that for Frank, and is that for people at an ATM or a carjacking or an ambush. Understanding startle flinch conversion just at a psychological cerebral level lets you embrace it so that you don't panic or go fetal. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool. You don't want to do that.
So you practice, you get that into your brain, the move itself into your brain, because in a way it's almost a natural reaction. Like when you put somebody in a headlock, you were talking about, they go, I don't know what to do. What happens is their hands go up.
Sure.
And that's what you teach them. Just kind of ingrain that should be your first response. It's almost like with boxing, they keep training you the same thing so you can't do it wrong, even when you get hurt, right?
Yeah, and if you look at boxing in a Thai stance, and any combative art, you will see similarities in this. I mean, somebody smart figured this out years ago. Nobody created a formula and a scientific background, a medical or a legal doctrine that's associated with it, which we need today. You know,
yeah.
You need the white paper bullshit, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's so much crap out there that you need some sort of cerebral testimonial for smart people to go, oh, wait a minute, let me look at this.
Well, what was funny about watching you on, because I'd done my share of fighting and wrestling, and I can always tell if somebody's had some like if somebody's actually been in a ring or somebody's thrown a punch and had somebody punching at them, you know, you know as well as I do, like a lot of martial arts schools, you'll just go through like basically like one step sparring and, you know, like those Aikido schools and a lot of Kung Fu schools. You're not really getting in there and actually trying to kick and punch each other and wrestle each other to the ground. But you obviously had your experience with that. So you were able to kind of transfer that kind of hard experience, because there's something about coming across, up against that objective reality of getting punched by somebody stronger. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's that classic. It's been misquoted and attributed to so many people, but it was Joe Louis, the boxer. Of course, if Mike Tyson walked in here right now, I'd say, no, you said it, sir.
Yeah.
But, you know, the current generation thinks he said it, but he was quoting Joe Louis, the boxer, who said everyone has a plan until they get hit.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
I didn't know that. That was Joe Louis.
Yeah, yeah. Unless Mike Tyson's coming here. So.
I like that. I bet you Mike Tyson would. Mike Tyson was a boxing
connoisseur,
historian.
Yeah, loved it.
Especially, so, he wore the black shorts.
Yeah.
He dressed like the old school boxers.
Yeah. I was too. I used to, when I lived in Montreal, I used to go running every morning in the winter, and I would come back frozen and, you know, make some cream of wheat and sit and watch fights and just study fights all the time until my first lesson. I mean, I just did that for years.
Yeah.
And
funny how that's ingrained in some of us, you know?
You do it. I'm sure you know, at one point in your career as a comedian, maybe still you've got certain people that always make you laugh and always did.
Yeah.
And they're the people that influence you. Not that you copy their humor, because you clearly have your own style.
No,
but inspire you.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You copy the principles. Fighting is, you know, if you talk to a good, like the guy I roll with sometimes, jiu-jitsu, and he was a wrestler, a D1 wrestler, and fought on a you know, high level as an MMA guy. But, you know, he'll always talk about, if you're wrestling, he'll go head and hips, control the head, control the hips. That's the first thing you do. And then we'll worry about moves. But there's the platform, the principle, and that's kind of what spear is.
Sure.
Get yourself in a position. You know, I was going to go hunting. I'm going hunting with Joe Rogan on the 21st of November. We do this show every year called Meat Eater. And we go with this guy, Steve Rinella. He's a great, great hunter. I'm not a big hunter. I'm not really into it. But we were going to go out to Alaska, and there are problems with hybrids where the polar bears are mating because of global warming, I guess, with the grizzlies. And now they're creating hybrids. And those bears, a polar bear will stalk and kill you. Grizzly will kill you if you come across it and stuff. Polar bear will look for you and your food. So I said to Rinella, I said, you know, I'm bringing a gun. Just so you know, I'm bringing a .44 or a pistol grip shotgun. I'm not getting killed by a bear. And he kind of shook his head, and he goes, well, you know, it's just not how it goes. And I go, what do you mean? And, you know, and they stalk you. He goes, I mean, technically, I guess they stalk you. But you see, you have to understand, when you get attacked by an animal, it happens in 1 second, and you don't know what to do. It's not like you're ready and you see it coming a lot of times. A lot of times, 1,000 things happen, and this in a couple of seconds, you got an animal on you. You're not reacting with your gun in the ready position. And that holy shit moment is a very difficult thing to get ready for, man.
That is actually the genesis of all my spear research.
Really?
Yes. Not about the bear, but the metaphor. And in that, no matter what you do, no matter what complex motor skill training you have, no matter what your background is, here's the, all our language is if then go to. It's all DOS. It's all, and people go, well, I disagree with Blauer. Are like people who believe in unicorns and mermaids, and, you know.
People who disagree with Blauer are people who believe in unicorns and mermaids.
So
I like that, dude.
Because
it's confidence.
And I don't mean it to be arrogant. What I'm talking about is CCTV. What I'm talking about is eyewitness reports. The most badass person you know will tell you, "Man, I was jumped once, and I thought I was going to die, and this happened." And then you're like, "Him."
Oh, because, no doubt.
You know,
most guys who do that, most guys who learn to fight, my experience, most guys who become self-defense experts had a holy shit moment in their life and never wanted to experience that again. And I don't actually believe in courage. I've talked to Navy SEALs and badass guys who say, you're scared shitless. You just learned how to operate within the fear.
Yeah.
That's it.
You manage the fear.
If you're not scared, you're dumb.
And this is all part of what we teach. And the initial premise starts with Spears, a bridge to your next move. Spears, spontaneous protection, enabling an accelerated response. Spontaneous protection refers specifically to the body's DNA level, genetic wiring of this startle flinch mechanism, which, using medical speak, is designed to disengage from noxious stimuli. That's the actual, you know, the statement in the neural anatomy book that we use to reference it. Mm. Disengage from noxious stimuli, which is big fancy for push away the douchebag, get rid of the danger. And so the hands reflexively come up, and as they come up to protect the command center, because your body at an unconscious innate level knows that the head has your thinking system, your sight, your breathing, your speaking, all of that's there. And if you, the metaphor we tell people is, if you lose your head in a fight, you're out of the fight.
Yeah.
Literally, if it's cut off, metaphorically, if it's knocked out, and figuratively, if you just have that moment where you're just frozen with fear.
Yeah.
And so what we see is a missing element in whether it's MMA, Thai, boxing, street, self-defense, is the startle flinch moment. Is when you're the combination of everything you know about instincts and intuition and everything you've learned locks up, like your computer just froze. You don't have enough RAM and things have slowed down and it's frozen and you've got to reboot. Well, our premise is, if you stress inoculate that and you understand the language and you understand the movement, and a lot of it's very predictable, then what you do is you shorten your conversion speed when it happens. The magic of the system is, we aren't that arrogant that we've never said, train with us, this will never happen. We've said, train with this, train with us. We hope this never happens. If it does, this is the plan. And,
right.
And just by going, oh, I know that, it changes your personal confidence.
Absolutely, man. Getting ready. There's a book called On Combat and another book called On Killing about this.
Dave Grossman.
Yeah, it's about stress inoculation. You sink to the level of your training. There are people who, in a fire, were pulling on the door with all their might when all they had to do was push or turn the doorknob. There are people that will call 911 and the paramedics will get there and the kid is still at the bottom of the swimming pool. It never dawned on them to dive into the pool. He'll tell you to practice dialing 911 because in a holy shit moment, you forget how to dial 911. So a lot of this stuff is rehearsal, even in your mind, right? I mean, a lot of it's...
Sure.
Here's my question. I always think about home invasion. That's why I have guns and I got alarms and I got a pit bull. I just want to be ready.
Sure.
What's the best way to make your home safe? First of all, where can they go to learn Spear?
Right here. If they can get here right now, we can do a
come to my house, ladies and gentlemen, in Santa Monica.
So he's afraid about the home invasion, but this is his address.
Exactly. We'll be waiting.
Separate show.
We'll be waiting. Yes. Yeah, separate show.
So... Go to my website. There's three or four different avenues. If you're law enforcement, military, we have a specific train the trainer program. It's a 5-day, 40-hour class that we teach all over the world.
You teach a lot. You've been teaching law enforcement and military for years, right?
Yeah, over 30.
Yeah.
You know, and that's funny. You know, just jump ahead to this recent CrossFit Defense program that I started, where a lot of people just... They post, who is this guy? You know, what kind of gimmick is this? They don't realize that I've been CrossFitting since 2006.
Yeah.
And that I've been teaching real-world self-defense since 1979.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah.
Considering you're only 40. So.
Considering I'm 11.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'm 53 years old. I've been teaching 20 years longer than people brag about training. You know, that you get that point where you go, I've been training 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Really? Kiss my ass.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're older.
Yeah.
So
Learning Spear, we have a PDR team called Personal Defense Readiness Coach, which is a program just for professional trainers who realize something's missing in their training.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do a scientific scenario? How do I evaluate what I'm doing? One of my favorite stories, my first student who lost his first real fight, when he told me what happened, my immediate response was my failure in preparing him.
Mm.
Over the years, I've watched people when their student lost, where the instructor would go, well, you know, where's your awareness? You didn't turn your hip. You didn't do this move. How come you didn't do the secret move? How come?
Yeah.
Like, in other words, they blamed it on the student.
Yep.
Where what I did immediately, and that
responsibility.
Yeah, I carried on that. And now when I train trainers, I go, it's your responsibility that your audience gets this.
Yeah.
You need to mentor. This is not just you going blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You're stupid. You know, if you don't get it. And so I totally revamped our training. I mean, it was just completely wrong how I had prepared them. And so we've now created three definitive avenues to practice so that we can scale it. One is we train trainers, combatives, and defensive tactics coaches because they're the subject matter experts in their units or organizations. So that's one program. You run a martial arts school, you're a self-defense coach, you're a consultant. We have our personal defense readiness program. That's another avenue.
But you've worked with MMA fighters.
Yep.
You know, Frank Mir and guys like that. How do you train them?
A lot of the times, it's very niche. It had to do with my high gear. It had to do with ways to practice ground and pound without killing your training partner.
Cool. With your gear.
Yeah. So
that stuff is really, that high gear shit is really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I spent 6 years, putting it together, prototyping. I couldn't find a manufacturer to make it.
It sounds like an awesome tool to really like,
you know what it is? It's the difference between shadow boxing in the air and then being able to hit pads or hit a bag.
Makes a huge difference.
You know, yeah. And the air is important, but
how heavy are your gear as your high gear suit?
8-9 pounds.
That's
head
it?
To toe.
Really?
Yeah. When the suit's on.
Wow. It looks a hell of a lot heavier.
Yeah. No.
That's really good.
Completely light. We'll get it on another show.
Well, we're going to video for you guys. We're going to do another, this is the first of a series of podcasts. We're going to do another podcast. I'm going to put on gear. I'm going to get Brendan Schaub to put on gear. And I'm going to punch his fucking lights out. Yeah, right.
He's laughing now. He's not even here.
He is laughing. He is laughing. He's just a beast. It's funny when you roll with those. I've had the pleasure of, I shouldn't even say rolling, but I've just got to move around with some of these guys to do it for a living.
Yeah.
It's something every man should experience to understand that physical inequality is such a fact. Oh, forget it. I mean, there are guys that can do whatever they want to you. If they want to throw a blonde wig on you and have their way with you and yes. you better make them a sandwich.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Here's your cigarette.
Yeah. Here's your cigarette, sir.
I've had that. I mean, I've worked with, when I say worked with, Uriah Faber, BJ Penn, Diego Sanchez, Randy Couture, done stuff with all these guys.
You see
guys.
That Diego Sanchez fight with Gilbert Melendez? It's the craziest fight I've ever seen.
There's been a bunch. Yeah. I don't think I saw that one.
He's probably one of the, I mean, Rogan called it the best fight he's ever seen in the octagon. And this was last UFC. Anyway, but we'll keep going.
But like these guys are incredible. You know, going back to what we were talking about, a lot of them will, I know some that go, I had no idea what I would do in a real fight. Like they,
isn't that funny?
In their mind, now they would be in it. Like if somebody started hitting them, they would be in it.
Sure.
But the pre-contact cues, the awareness, the management of fear. I mean, I've been downstairs at a UFC watching guys like look like they're ready to throw up. They're so nervous to go out there.
Yeah.
Right. Mike Tyson used to puke before all this.
I know a lot of really, really badass fighters who have to be talked out of their locker room.
Yeah. So, and then once they go out there and play goes on, they're killers. People forget that they're humans with a special skill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good point.
You know,
humans with a special skill, even though it's fighting.
Yeah.
It's still a special skill.
Well, what's his face? He won the UFC championship. Oh, my God. I just forgot his name.
Boss Rutten? Hoist Gracie?
No, before that old school. Oh, my God.
Boss Rutten, Hoist Gracie.
Before that heavyweight.
Dan Severn.
My God.
Fry.
I apologize. Anyways, it'll come back to me after the show.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting in his changing room at a gig, and I always interview, like I've interviewed from Sugar Ray Leonard to all the guys. As a fear management consultant, I try to phrase it in a way that I'm not going to get the fisherman answer, the biggest fish, but I don't have a picture, right? I'm not trying to help them glorify something. I'll play dumb and ask them a question just to see what they really see. And here I am, I'm talking to a guy, and I can't believe I forgot his name, because he fought on Benny Urquidez's his retirement fight. That's how old I am. And when it was just a kickboxing match, and he had just come off a loss, and the WKA president described me as the Anthony Robbins of self-defense.
That's great.
Yeah. And he said, would you work with him? Because he can't lose this fight because it's a televised fight.
Yeah.
And he just lost in Japan. Maurice Smith.
Oh, Maurice.
Yeah.
He's so awesome. Yeah.
So thank you. Maurice. Sorry, Maurice. I couldn't remember your name.
He's such a badass.
Yeah. So, so here I am. I'm in his room doing a whole bunch of shit, talking to him. And this was really cool. The mind navigates the body. And you could have 3% body fat, and you could have an 8-pack, and you could roll with everybody and this and that. And if you shit your pants when it's time to go, you're done. The mind navigates the body. And the first place you're hitting a fight is your emotional psychological system. So we do a ton of research on that. Guys don't like it. They want to get out and start doing stuff. And I go, no, you're sitting down for a day. We do our seminars. It's a day of mindset. Mm. Because anybody...
So can, huge. It's so
anyone
important.
Can build a body.
Yeah.
You know?
So explain that mindset.
Well, we created this it's a short little map called the cycle behavior, and it's really the neural circuitry of fear. And you just plug in your scenario. If you Google cycle of behavior, comma, Tony Blauer, you'll see it'll pop up online in a bunch of places, both the picture, descriptions, and videos of it. But it basically takes you through, you plug in whatever scenario, and then it helps you identify your motivation, your expectations, what you visualize, what your beliefs are, and you go in and you fill out all that shit. And as you get clear on it, you realize, I'm ready to hit this guy.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to hit this guy. I'm ready to ask this woman to marry me. I'm not ready to. And it can be applied to anything. It's magic because it's not about fighting. It's about how do I make decisions under duress? Mm. I love it. And it's been around for, I was listening to Howard Gardner, a social scientist on a PBS radio show. And he had done a book called Frames of Mind. And it was a social scientist book. And he said 80% of an individual's motivation is derived from their expectations.
Hmm.
And I went, and I was driving and I
That's
went.
That's interesting.
And I went, oh my God, what was that? And he repeated it again, like he was listening to me, and I almost hit a tree. I was like, what? It was like, I said, what was that? Because like, I wanted to
so
write
say
it
that again.
He goes, 80% of your motivation is derived from your expectations.
Totally, yeah.
Isn't that cool?
It makes sense. People have, they create a contract with life. What they'll do is they'll say, well, I'm going to do all the things, these things right. And that means that I'm going to get a payoff. And that payoff is, and they make a deal with themselves. Problem is the universe or whatever it is, isn't listening to you. It's, yeah. it's not as though you have, that contract may very well not pan out. You got to be ready for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the last, video that CrossFit did, an interview with me, that's what I talked about, is that every day you have some sort of confrontation, and therefore every week you have a confrontation. Mm-hmm. And how you handle the confrontation on that day or that week ultimately influences the quality of your life. Because whatever that perceived contract is,
yeah,
when it gets derailed by weather, another person out of your control, a bad business deal or whatever, that can throw many people. I mean, that can do many people in right there.
Yep.
And that's the metaphor of the ambush. That's the spear. Hey, I just flinched. I got to convert the flinch and get tactical. And that's really the whole metaphor of the spear system. You can apply it. You can apply it to anything. Nowhere is it more important than personal safety.
No doubt.
You know,
and that's we're hopelessly unprepared for an attack as human beings. I mean, we just are.
Well, that's Maslow's hierarchy of need. At the end of the day, if you can't procreate, get home to your family and do stuff. So we can, you know, bitch and moan and go, oh, I lost my job, or my girlfriend left me, my boyfriend left me, my car broke down. This. I did this once at a university. I was talking to a bunch of students and hundreds of people. And I said, what is the number one fear in the world? So it's public speaking. Okay. Number two, sharks. Number three, loss of a loved one. Number four, I said, nowhere on that is it getting raped in an alley and then murdered, or getting murdered and then raped.
And it happens.
It's not even on there. I said, let me ask you all, there's three or 400 of you in this classroom. Who here, because I'm shitting my pants up here talking, public speaking is just the scariest thing in the world for me, right? So they all laugh. I go, who here, if I said, you have to pick right now, come up here and do this speech that I wrote. Oh my God. Or go in the alley and get raped and murdered. Pick one.
Right. It's not even in the same universe.
Yeah. But what's so amazing is there is such a disconnect that it's not even on the list. I didn't even want to know about it. Everyone says to me,
good point.
When people, I just did a blog called Get Off the X. What does it cost you if you don't fight back? Where I was coming back from Brandon Lee's funeral, actually. Mm. And I'm in a bad mood. A good friend of mine just died. I was on the set of The Crow 3 weeks earlier. I'm freaking out. Same birthday or same the anniversary of his dad's death. So it was like all spooky.
Crazy,
weird.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and my seat's empty. And all of a sudden this flight attendant comes in there and goes, I'm sitting there. And she's adrenalized. Like, I thought I was going to miss the flight. Oh my God. I didn't want to stay here. This is my hub. I don't have my clothes here. I'm so glad I got on the flight. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God. This is a red eye flight. She's going to talk all the way home.
Yeah.
She goes, so we're sitting there. We're just starting taxi. She goes, so I'm a flight attendant, obviously. What are you? And I'm like, and I'm not a rude guy, right? So I'm going, I'm going to say something that's going to shut this conversation down. We're about to take off on an airplane. I'm going to say, yeah, hey, I'm a life insurance salesman. Because who wants to talk about life insurance?
Greatness.
As you're taking
that's
off, right?
Great.
She looks at me and she looks me up and down. And she goes, bullshit. You're not an insurance salesman. Well, I don't lie.
That's good. Right?
So I go, okay, you got me. I'm a life extension insurance salesman. She goes, extension insurance? Life extension? What the hell is that? I said, I teach self-defense. She's like, oh my God, I always wanted to learn how to defend myself. And I'm like, okay, this isn't working. Right?
It's not
like,
working,
the
yeah.
The conversation's going on. So I decide, I'm just going to get in her face. I'm going to go, no, you didn't. You didn't want to learn how to defend yourself. You know how I know that? And it's like that person saying, putting words in your mouth. I go, because people who always wanted to do something, do no, things.
That's right.
They did it. You never wanted to do yeah. it. I said, in fact, what you meant to say, if I can put words in your mouth literally, and her, she's like this, is you never wanted to be near a situation where you might have to defend yourself.
Very good point.
And she does this, and she goes, oh my God, that's true. And we ended up talking all night. But,
of course.
But it was...
If you think about it, that is what we all do. I mean, especially if you have kids, you're looking for a safe neighborhood, a gated community, a big car, all that stuff. You want the cops nearby. The first thing you ask when you buy a house is there a lot of crime in the area. Those are the kind of things that we instinctively, human beings have a very strong instinct for safety, right?
They want it. And if I say to you, you know, and you can have the dog and you can have the gun and you can have all that. But at the end of the day, now it's different in your case because you physically have done some stuff. Most people like this woman on this flight don't want to do stuff.
Right.
And what I tell people is, it's like, this isn't, you don't have to get a marshal, you don't have to get a black belt. You just have to get to that place in your head where you go, fuck you, I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
And
well,
and
a long,
it's
time,
to
a
get
long
there.
Time ago, I was at the Comedy Store and there was a situation. My friend was getting confronted by a guy and I ran behind the guy. And my wife at the time goes, what were you doing? And I said, what? She goes, why'd you run behind that guy? And I said, I ran behind that guy because if he attacked my friend, I was going to choke him out or punch him as hard as I could in the back of the head. And she was like, I didn't, how do you even think that way? Like, I've been thinking that way my whole fucking yeah. life.
And some people
that's the
do.
First thing I think about. I don't even, yeah. I mean, I am always prepared for the extreme because it happens.
Yeah.
You know, you think about the fact that you could be in a movie theater. Somebody comes in and starts opening fire with a 100-round
drum.
That'll
never happen.
Right. That'll never happen.
Right.
Happens.
Right.
How do you, you know, carrying a gun in today's world is a dicey prospect. There are a lot of laws that kind of prevent you from doing things like that. If you shoot somebody in your house, they better be coming towards you. There's a lot of things like that. How does somebody protect themselves? I mean, in their home.
You know, it's interesting.
No real answer. I mean,
yeah. So there is no real answer. You've done everything right. I have exact same thing. I've got three dogs. Two of them are Fila Brasileiros.
Oh.
Google that.
If you guys don't know anything about Fila Brasileiros.
Google that.
They are about as, you could put a saddle on them and ride them, and they are part mastiff. They're the dogs that they use to guard the gates of hell. Let's just put it that way. Henso Gracie told me a great story one time about his brother.
Henso's a great guy.
Yeah, Henso's the best. I love Henso. But he told me a story about his brother who I've never met.
As a grappler, right? You love
him. A killer. And as a man.
Just check.
He's a very handsome man. But Henso told me Alf wanted to train, and he left his gear, his uniform, on a table. And there were these two Fiat Brasileiros that his friend owned, and the dogs were like, oh, oh, at the gate. And Alf was like, I want to train with my gear today. I'm going to train with my gear today. This is how he tells the story. Like, I'm going to get it. I was like, Alf, take it easy, man. Alf, climb the fence. These dogs are going, and he's like, and Alf goes, I'm not going to let a dog keep me away from my gi. I'm going to train with my gi, like that. And Alf owns pit bulls and fighting dogs and stuff. And apparently Alf just got climbed out, and he starts, and those dogs are like that. And he goes, don't move. Don't try it. I'm going to get my gi. I mean, he's talking to them the whole way, and he gets it, climbs over the fence. He's out of his fucking mind, by the way, because those dogs will kill you.
He alpha mailed them. Yeah. They knew something was okay then because my dogs have sent a clear message to a couple of workers who failed to heed my advice. I tell people, the doorbell will ring, and I'll say to guys, I go, listen, I'm going to go make sure my dogs are crated or in the back. Because if you ever come in my house and they're not, they will kill you. And then I have to dispose of
the body. First of all,
body.
It's a very smart thing to do. And this is what I always tell people. You should always do that. Why? Because chances of you getting robbed are usually somebody who's cased your property before.
Yes, correct.
And there are guys who do that stuff. And if they don't do it, they have a cousin or a friend who will do it. Mm-hmm. So if they see your house and they see a great TV and they see, God forbid, your child or something, whatever they covet, they've already cased your property, man. They've seen that your dog is friendly and all that shit. No. I'm putting my fucking dog away because my dog will bite your face off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My dog, if you Google Fila, Brasileira, yeah. It says, every single website says, Mastiff Hound Dog, originally bred to chase, to hunt jaguars and runaway slaves.
Yeah.
Which is perfect for you and I because there's no more jaguars.
Wait a minute.
What?
Pause.
Very quiet.
Tony Blair is obviously a terrible racist and a plantation owner in Brazil. but they were bred for pretty horrific purposes.
Yeah.
I mean, they are man stoppers.
So, I was told by the breeder that they're like AK-47s once they go off. They don't.
Yeah, the cops don't use them because they do too much damage.
And you can't control them. You can't teach them German Shepherd.
That's right. You can't call them off. A huge part of dog training is being able to, you get that fight drive in them, they take it to the person, but then you got to be able to call them off.
I didn't want that. I knew if you'll meet my wife one day, her focus, her greatest assets and skills is knowing where to shop. And then occasionally feed me and the kids. Okay, so training the dog with me on the road wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So we have two of these beep beep beep. This is censored, honey. You'll never listen to the show.
Yeah.
And so we've got two Filas, we've got guns.
Yeah.
All of my family's been exposed to some sort of combatives.
Yeah.
And so you asked me. The real question is how do you protect your house? Some of the stuff is as simple and as instinctive as what you said is making sure that you look in the eye of the people that work in your house. A dog is huge. Most people don't. We tell people bad guys don't get caught, hurt, or for things to take too long. So if you can put that doubt in their mind,
they'll choose the next house.
Yeah,
you got three big dogs. It's just a pain in the ass. They'll go to the next house. A lot of times.
Yeah.
But the truth is most dogs won't do a goddamn thing when you come into the house. Most dogs.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are dogs that will.
Yeah. So, you know, some people get a dog just as a deterrent. Someone comes by and it's the barking.
I like the dog because it gives me advanced warning. So I don't flinch. So I got time to flinch when I hear the dog bark and then I'm ready.
Right, exactly.
It's almost my spear, right? I mean, there's always that.
And that's what it is. Remember, the spear is a metaphor. There's three iterations of the spear. Spear is one movement.
Mm.
Primal, protective, tactical. Primal is what your body does prior to any training. Protective is the threat is coming on too fast and your brain is just catching up to what's going on. And then tactical is I'm fully locked on radar lock. And so most shootings are protective shooting where somebody is, you know, they're still breathing, pushing backwards, pushing the gun towards the threat back because they're not engaged like a sniper.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And it's ironic when we do a lot of our gunfighting classes and range stuff, you'll watch over and over again. Everyone shoots tactically, but statistically, most people shoot between the primal and the protective phases. Our whole, even in striking, I can show you videos going where, you know, somebody finishes tactically. unless yeah. it was an accidental incident.
Yeah, but they start instinctively. They kind of start yeah. moving backwards.
It's because we're all cells at a cellular level. As a single cell amoeba, our SOP is to move away from danger. If I take a pin and poke an amoeba under a microscope, it'll bounce away from it.
Even predators do that. My buddy, this isn't my buddy, but a guy I met. My buddy the predator. My buddy who worked at Discovery and swims with great whites. When a great white comes too close to him, he'll kind of move his hands in front of his face, like do a kind of like a bring his hands up in a cross and then bring them down. And that thing will poo and swim away, a 21-foot great white. Nice. They don't like sudden movements. Even a lion, if they hear a loud noise, will instinctively run away and then kind of regroup.
Right.
You know?
So you die like a minute later.
You die like a minute later. Yeah. That's it. You give yourself a couple. Just a whole minute.
I have this whole theory. Do you remember the you ever see the CrossFit shirt, Strong People Are Harder to Kill?
No.
Classic shirt. So I'm in New York City and I see it, Strong People Are Harder to Kill. And I'm a shirt whore. So yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I got to buy that shirt. How much is that? $25. Boom, I got it. I get back to the hotel. I'm staring at it. I'm a little bit of an overthinker. I'm staring at it. I go, oh, fuck. My wife goes, now what? I go, I can never wear that shirt. She goes, what the hell are you talking about? It's a cool shirt. Strong people are harder to kill. I go, yeah, but it means I died. She goes, what? I said, strong people are harder to kill. Read the sentence. It just means I'm in good shape, so it's harder to kill me. But the sentence means I died, and it took a long time. And I'm thinking, if I know I'm going to die in a fight, I want it to happen really fast.
I always say that. My joke is, I always say, if you're going to die by biting, it should be a crocodile, a bear, or a fucking shark, not a human, because it would take a long time for a human. Yeah. It's actually worse to die by biting by human.
Yes,
they got a small mouth, blunt teeth. It would suck.
Yeah,
go for the big mouth. Go quick.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we solved a lot of problems here today.
We did.
What are we going to do on our next podcast, our video podcast?
We could maybe get some gear on.
Yeah, we're going to get some gear
beat
on.
Beat up Shab.
Yeah, we're going to beat Shab up. You and I are going to descend upon him like two wild dogs and a bear.
I'm not part of this, by the way.
I'll hamstring him.
Okay.
You reason with him. You have a very hypnotic. You got a lot of soda in your voice. You might be able to soothe him.
I might, and I can get one of those. Like what do they call those?
Well, that's what your voice is. Hypnotic, a talisman.
Like a metronome.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And if that doesn't work out, it'll be a show where he's alone, we're unconscious on the floor, and he's just talking about what pussies we are.
That's kind of probably what would happen.
That's probably it's
gonna using happen. Us as doormats. Yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that there are men that can
impose. He's not invited.
My podcast, The Fighter and the Kid, yesterday, it was at the Fox, and at one point I was sitting there with Chael Sonnen and Brendan Schaub. Not only are they better looking than me and have better hair, they can kick my ass.
How funny is Chael?
The best. Isn't the best. I was so excited. I get starstruck with those kind of guys. I meet all kinds of actors. I can give a fuck. Yeah. I meet Chael, and I'm just like, you're cool.
Yeah. I'm like that too, man.
Yeah, he's such a bad. Well, because we want to be those guys. I mean, the truth is, I said to Chael, I said, all of us want to be, all guys, actors, and everybody ultimately want to be.
You want to be that hero.
We
want to
be all men. I always say my whole next 1 hour is based on the theme that most all men are running away from cowardice and toward heroism. Our biggest fear is that we're cowards. Our biggest aspiration is to be a hero. And we will do crazy shit even if we can't. Your tattoo says, you're the hero in your story. Well, I always say, the other thing I say is that most of us are starring in a movie. If you become an adult, most of us are starring in a movie that we probably wouldn't go see ourselves because it's too fucking boring. So, but you know, I had a very different movie than what I'm, you know, living now. You think you're going to be the gunfighter, and when you have kids and family, you end up being the fucking shop.
How long is this
boarding
movie?
It up. Exactly. Traffic and setting an example and responsibility and taxes and monogamy. What a fucking bore, man.
That's funny. I thought you were going somewhere else with that, but no, now I'm...
You see what I do? I twist. You look, once again, you want to see my stand-up, come to Utah. November 29th and 30th, day after Thanksgiving. Can't wait to travel on that day and do a little stand-up in the land of Mormon. 140. I got to get out of here, boys and girls. Love you. Thank you, Tony Blauer, for being a man and for what you do, making things better.
Thank you, sir.
And making things safer. And this is the first of many podcasts, Tony Blauer. See you later.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.